Welcome to Climate Talk. I'm your host, Josephine Karunji, and this is the accessible, acronym-free podcast about everything to do with climate and how it links with agriculture in Uganda and beyond. In this podcast, we'll be hearing the voices of farmers, business people, and local communities from across the country. We'll explore their experiences as they respond to the challenges and the opportunities resulting from climate change. We'll also be featuring voices and stories that you don't normally hear, talking about the details of adapting to climate change, some of the hard stories of the impacts of sudden change in environment, but also stories of opportunities, humor, survival, and determination. And we're starting in Arua, where Alice Onitaru, a 57-year-old farmer and a primary school teacher from Ngadi village, describes her own experience of farming in an unpredictably changing climate.
Ozata angu vile awadere, ozata angu vile re, esa awadere, amano vuzudi aleni adere, ozata euni yozazure, euni yozandro korea, euvune rade neko.
In very few words, Mama has said that the impact of climate change is grave. Right now, she's talking about the season of rain. It is over raining, so much so that there are issues of weeds. Weeds are overpowering what you're planting, but also there are issues around the fact that that soil is a bit heavy. And it preserves a lot of moisture, which is too much. After you harvest your things, because of the cold, things get spoiled. I think where she plants, it's sort of a hill, so there is erosion. And even sometimes she buys a sacket of seed at 30,000. Sometimes she can buy 10 sackets, and the rain carries all the seeds down the hill, and she doesn't get much from it. So basically, the impact is grave. Sometimes it gets too cold. And then those days, they used to go and get firewood. They knew the times. So they would go. They would know that this is dry season. I'm going to collect firewood, and I'll come back. But now, first of all, firewood is not near. It's far. And when you attempt to go, you're washed by rain. And you don't know when it will rain and when it will not rain. So you're washed by rain in the morning. When you attempt to go in the evening, you're washed by rain. So firewood is a challenge. Everything is a challenge. And in fact, if it wasn't for the fact that she believes in God, right now she'd be having a problem with God.
When we talk about climate change, it can be easy to say those words without really knowing what they mean. What are we talking about on a countrywide scale? Xavier Ejoyi is a country director for Action Aid International Uganda, who is working with farmers and communities across the country. I asked him how he defines climate change.
Climate change is basically a long-term variation in climate over time. That is impacting and shifting the parameters of what we are used to. When I say long term, it's measured scientifically, I think, 20, 30 years time. So you've seen patterns of rain change. If you had rain this year, next year you didn't have, that's not climate change. That's a variation in the weather. But if you're having a pattern where the rains used to come between February and April, and for the last 10 years you're seeing that the rains are delaying, or that pattern that was known is disrupted, then you know that that is changing. But it is traced over a long period of time. That's what I can say. And in this country, we can trace that. The Uganda Meteorological Authority has actually data that points to different parts of this country that has changes in the weather pattern tracked over a very long period of time, whether it's in Kabale, which used to be, you know, the Switzerland of Uganda, and mosquitoes will not live there. Now we're having some of the growing incidences of malaria in Kabale tells you that there is something that is going on wrong. Or you go into Bugisu, coffee growing area, corn growing area, and you find in that some of the diseases that used not to be reported on the maize or on the coffee is increasingly there. And then you know that there is a change in that pattern. And as I said, it is measured over a long period of time. So that is what climate change is and needs to be presented as such. There is a conceptual clarity that we need to make people understand. Otherwise, we can conflate things and we start to talk about things that are not, or we give ammunition to people who deny that there's climate change. So I think we owe the communities a service to break it down and say we can actually demonstrate how things have changed over a long period of time.
How have you seen climate change impact agriculture with the farmers that you've interfaced with?
It's in major ways. So we work with small-scale farmers, as I said. They are Uganda's biggest proportion of farming, and largely to address issues of livelihood. It's for food. Most of the needs of the people living in poverty is food, primarily. And they want just to have a predictable food supply. And then they come to income of how they can sell the surplus to maybe send children to school, to buy clothing, to and other necessities. That's what they're doing. So we've seen over time people who are trying to piece together a livelihood to have food security. That is disrupted when there is a weather episode. Or a pattern that they are used to is disrupted. We're seeing people who they get to a place where they cannot now diversify their incomes. So one, the disruption to the agricultural practices that it means. Two, the even movement, a place like Katakwi, which when it floods, the housing patterns are disrupted. People have to move away. So even traveling around is difficult. You find canoes at play, and then the grass-thatched houses, they are submerged in water. They have to be displaced and losing their own social settings and safety nets. That's what they are. So if something happens to me, I usually rely on my family or the extended family. But when there is displacement, now you go to Bududa, a section of the family has been displaced to Chiriandongo because of the landslides. It means that that safety net that naturally existed is no longer there. And I have to fend for myself. If it is not there, I'm on the verge of literally survival, if not death. So those are some of the disruptions that we see. Important for us is that people are losing their own sovereignty, food sovereignty, and which is really important. Where poor people are, where systems of risk mitigation are really weakest in this part of the world, it means that there are means of adaptations that are ingrained in our culture, in our tradition. People had granaries, they would store their millet and groundnuts and beans and so on. So those adaptation measures, they are disrupted, and they now become dependent on the market. And remember, money is not in circulation in most of this country, and you can't have it if you can't produce agriculturally to or have anything to exchange to earn the money and to buy the food. And so that dependence on the market for food when you are yourself living a subsistence life is a challenge. And so we're seeing that climate change pushes people continually to depend on the market, yet they are not accustomed to the market.
Do you have a specific example that will bring this home for us? When we speak about regions and we just speak about districts, it's very easy for somebody to think regions and districts are not people.
Yeah.
Do you have any examples that would bring this home for us?
Sure. We work in Nebbi, Nebbi district, General West Nile, but the bigger Nebbi district, Pakwach, Nebbi, Zombo, we work in that area. Increasingly, when droughts come, a lot of crops are destroyed during the dry season. And then you find that the maize gardens, they are withering, and yet the family depends a lot on the maize so that they can sell some of it for livelihood. And when they are not able to get the yields that can help to sustain them, it means that they have to resort to other ways of getting the livelihood. Where are they going to get food from? They'll start to look for either odd jobs to do work, to be able to get money to buy food. So they're living from hand to mouth. And when that happens, they were expecting a surplus from maize to be able to sell and send children to school. The children are dropping out of school, and the families are not able to sustain them in school. And so we're seeing a lot of that happening. But Nebbi is a fertile area. It's a place that grows, but increasingly faced with climate change issues or weather variability, you see disruptions in livelihoods, and you find people increasingly going down. And Zombo, very fertile area, accessible to the DRC, fine coffee grown there, even tea now, and maize, and lots of other crops growing there. But the roads are inaccessible during the wet season. Trailers and trailers are pushed on the sides of the road, and is basically you can't access the market. The beautiful food produce is rotting away on the roadside. It can't go anywhere. So it's not just affecting the livelihoods directly, it's affecting infrastructure and transport. You can't get goods from the city, manufactured goods, you can't get your goods to the market so as to earn. And so that's a loss to the community. And so for as long as climate change is with us and we're not prepared to address those effects, having roads that can be motorable, can bring goods, farm products to the market, it is a challenge.
In Kwale District, we met with Esther Aport, a soybean seed producer from a little joint farmers cooperative society.
So briefly, Esther introduced herself, but she started, I think for her to answer very well, she started from the side of how climate change is affecting them as smallholder farmers, where she mentioned a few things around poor yields that they are currently experiencing as a result of climate change, which has resulted in low incomes for them who are dependent on farming. And then this also affects their capacity to access or to buy quality seeds and other inputs, and also to participate in agriculture, other value chain activities like weeding, post-harvest handling, and also affects their ability to manage other household costs like school fees and healthcare. On the adaptation strategies that they are currently undertaking as farmers, she talked of planting improved seeds, gave an example of drought tolerance, and then she also talked of timely planting so that the crops can be able to mature first before the impacts of the changing climate. And the last thing she talked about is use of mechanization to ensure timeliness in farming activities.
Esther and the farmers in her community are clearly finding their way around climate change. But right at the start where she speaks about how affected they are, climate change seems so daunting. So I asked Xavier what gives him hope.
Resilience of the communities. In 2019, I worked with a P3 pupil in the house to school.
That's about, 8 to 9 years old?
Yes, about 8 years. I walked for, it was 4.5 kilometers. And he woke up, he had to go and fetch water. So I was walking after him. We walked a kilometer to the borehole and returned. He bathed, put on his clothes, picked a cavera of groundnuts, semblance of breakfast, and we walked to school, 4.5 kilometers. Reaching school, the school had 2 classes in a church facing either way, and P3 class was under a tree. If it rains, that is the end of the school for this class. But one thing that, talking about what gives me hope, is the parents around that village, very poor as they are, put money together, collecting 2,000 shillings per month, and laid bricks, burnt the bricks, used mud, constructed 2 classrooms, looked for money for buying timber and iron sheets, and roofed this building. It was still dusty on the floor, but they moved P1 and P2 to that class they built. That is resilience.
Xavier paints a picture from his immersion that not many of us get to see or even experience. And he shares some insights into how climate change is specifically affecting women and amplifying their burden.
The impact is grave, especially in our country today, which is a patriarchal society. This is not just northern Uganda. This is everywhere. It's actually worst in the West. And we have research to that effect. A patriarchal society means that the resources, the means of production, and the proceeds of production are disproportionately controlled by men. Okay? And that is a big problem. One, it means that where there is climate change and the resources even for building resilience are controlled disproportionately by men, yet the burden of care is disproportionately borne by women, it means that you have a crisis. Let me paint to you this picture like this. 20%, about there about, of the land in Uganda is owned by women. 20, meaning the rest is owned by men. Our agriculture, which is largely subsistence, is 67% done by women. 67%.
That percentage seems to be getting lower.
It is getting lower, but 67 is not low. What that means is that the women have to produce on land that they don't own. Mm. And they certainly produce things that they don't have control over. The men will take charge of the groundnuts and sell the proceeds without permission, and they go and marry a second wife, and they go and drink, and they go and party with their friends and play Ludo on the roadside. That is what they are going to do. While the woman is left with a burden of care to make sure that somehow, miraculously, there's food on the table, and sometimes there is actually no table to put that food on. That's the burden that the women face. That where there is drought and the sources of water have dried, they are going to walk longer distances to go and fetch water. And that is very unfortunate, especially where the effects of climate now eat into the produce. It means that that burden just is amplified.
So to wrap this up, we're going to speak to one more smallholder farmer, and she's called Ida. She's also from Kole District.
Okay. Annabella Poor, Maya Balasab County, Kala District.
Aida was elaborating on how the climate change is affecting smallholder farmers. Number one, she mentioned that there is now erratic change of erratic rainfall. The onset of rainfall is no longer the way it used to be. Number two, there is a lot of heat these days. She mentioned that the yield has also decreased significantly. She also said that she mentioned about hailstorms affecting the crops in the garden, all which contributes towards low yield of the crops. As a farmer, all those are effects that reduces the yield, and that is seriously affecting them. In summary, that is what Aida was mentioning. She also talked about some of the causes a little bit on how people are cutting trees, how they are using fertilizers in a way that affects the crops over time. And she was cautioning people that let's try to do recommended practices for production.
Aida and the other farmers who were speaking to know climate change probably better than most of us. They live it every day in their lives, and that's part of why their stories are important and why we'll be featuring them in the weeks and the months to come, of course alongside the perspectives of people who can give us the bigger picture of how climate change is playing out in Uganda and in East Africa. So I hope you'll join us, and I hope you found this first short episode interesting, thought-provoking even, and maybe a good starting point for a new conversation. If you did, please leave a positive review, tell your friends about us, and tell them to give us a positive review too. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch, climatetalkpod, all in one word, @gmail.com is the place to go to email us. And I'll be back with episode 2 very soon. I'm Josephine Karunji, and this is Climate Talk Uganda.